It's the Lifetime Body Podcast, where science meets common sense and where we help you make your body last a lifetime. Join physical therapist, author, and human performance expert John Zombro and inquisitive life-optimizing co-host PK the Incomparable as we explore the secrets of food, movement, sleep, ergonomics, and awareness in the pursuit of ultimate wellness. In each and every show, you'll learn how to look, feel, and perform your best so that you can live your longest, healthiest, and happiest life. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode number 28 of the Lifetime Body Podcast. I'm your host, John Zombro, and today is another R-cubed show, R-cubed standing for R to the third power, or rant, rave, and ramble, but maybe not rage. This episode is entitled Meat Haters, with a question mark behind it, and this show had to come out sooner or later. I had some very incendiary comments, which I received, regarding talking about meat following the Top 20 Superfoods episode of last week. In fact, every time I mention meat as a high-quality food, no matter how objective, respectful, and scientific I think my points are, I usually get some hate mail from vegetarians and vegans. Some of the things that have been said are that meat eaters and proponents of said practice, possibly like me, are misinformed, barbaric, over-testosteroned, hyperjacked, low IQ beings who are extremely biased and ignorant of the so-called facts. I try not to be sensitive and just let that stuff roll, but I feel I need to respond in a way that clarifies my position while maintaining everyone's dignity and not resorting to name-calling. So here goes. I respect people, and what you eat is what you do, but it's not entirely who you are. Yes, you are made up of what you eat, and what you eat ate, if you will, and that's true for both plants and animals. You can picture a large fish eating a smaller fish, a cow eating grass, or a plant absorbing from the soil, water, and air. So those things are universal, but you as a person are much more than your dietary choices. In other words, you're not a vegan or a carnivore. Beyond a simple description, you're a person who may eat a vegan or carnivore or other type of diet or whatever you want to call it. Respect for our fellow men and women is rooted in accepting others, regardless of the choices they make in most cases. I want to objectively study data, share and inform others, but I gave up a long time ago the notion that I need to change or control others. I just want to facilitate well-considered actions and behaviors, and that includes information about nutrition. Choosing to not eat meat for a number of personal reasons needs to be respected, and likewise, refraining from labeling those who do eat meat as lesser evolved beings is essential. Being sensitive towards sentient beings, is totally understandable. Know that this is an eternal human trait, but only recently has it progressed to drive non-consumption of meat. Ancient man worshipped and celebrated the animals. They didn't kill out of bloodlust. They did it as part of the food chain and being the apex predator on the planet. That hasn't changed. To say that a meat eater has no conscience is unfair. For the record, I love food. I love plant-based foods. I love animal-based foods. These things are nutritious and in many ways medicinal. I eat foods that taste great, but that also give me the nourishment my body requires. I source these foods from the earth using the best scientific knowledge we have available today, as well as my instincts and intuition, which I always trust. My ultimate concern is really for your health. Let's look at this meat controversy from the position of ultimate wellness, which is what we're always talking about here at the Lifetime Body, and consider the data that we currently have available. In our 2.5 million years on the planet, meat has played a crucial and pivotal role in the human diet. Brain size and freedom from constant feeding are just two examples of the effect that meat has had on our evolution. While we are somewhat omnivorous, Our gastrointestinal biology is decidedly more carnivorous, or more on the carnivorous side of omnivorism, if you accept that, on the whole, and much more so than other primates. So I'll get into this a little bit. You know, we as humans have a very high, highly acidic or low pH stomach, which is really designed to aid in the digestion of protein. And unlike, let's say, chimpanzees and gorillas, we're not capable of massive amounts of hindgut fermentation. Our small intestines, where we do most of our nutritional absorption, is twice the length of those primates, and our large intestine is about half that length. And when you look at their diets, you know, gorillas eat mostly leaves and twigs, and chimpanzees have a more varied diet, including a lot of fruit. That's why they have those large abdomens, because they have all that coiled up hose inside of there, which is fermenting all of those fermentable materials, and we are not designed in the same manner. Meat provides essential amino acids and peptides as part of its protein, and as well as essential fatty acids in most cases, if it's a fattier meat or fish product. This includes the essential omega-3s, zinc, iron, vitamin B12, and of course the fat-soluble vitamins A, D, E, and K, particularly K2. No better source of all of those nutrients comes from animal products. Or animal products represent the best source of those products, or those nutrients, shall I say it that way. There's no anthropologic evidence to historically support veganism. So in other words, no surviving long-term, that's a key word there, culture existed on plant matter alone. It would have actually been medically impossible prior to the modern era of supplements, which has only occurred in the last several decades. However, health can be achieved on a vegan diet, but only in the modern context of excellent knowledge of nutritional biochemistry and cautious supplementation. Arguments abound, and many people feel great at first when they go on, let's say, a vegetarian diet. And mainly this is most of the time because they're getting off processed foods, which are absolute killers. And we've talked about junk food ad nauseum here on the show. Probably will continue to do so. But where the challenge comes in is that in the long term, and that's where if a person is going to do a vegan diet, they're going to need to supplement some of those key nutrients I mentioned earlier, because they really, the sources just don't exist in plant-only feeding. In fact, you can look at your DNA test results. So should a person want to go down, you know, that rabbit hole, it's called nutrigenomics, and identify some of the things such as enzymes or genes which code for specific enzymes for lipid metabolism, vitamin A synthesis, and ALA conversion, to name a few. ALA is alpha-linolenic acid, and that is the plant version of omega-3 fatty acids, which we have to convert in our bodies to DHA and EPA, unless we're consuming them from animal products. Well, some people have a much better genetically proven ability to convert the plant omega-3s into the essentials than others, and that's it's highly genetically related. Therefore, they will do better, those individuals with a little less meat in their diet and more plants than others. And that, again, this is all strongly linked to our genomes, and you can certainly study that if you want. But knowledge is power, and let's be careful not to judge others. Let's also be aware that if one is being a devout vegetarian or vegan and espousing its benefits and being critical of others, let's be careful not to occasionally cheat and become a nutritional bigot. In other words, if you claim that you are achieving your long-term health on a strictly vegetarian diet, but you have a burger every Saturday, that's not being a vegetarian, that's actually being an omnivore. So let's use the appropriate terms. Also, I always emphasize quality with all the foods that I consume and I recommend for others, and that includes meat. So we want to always have that in context. Quality is non-negotiable in all foods and all circumstances, including our relationships and how we're communicating today, which is maintaining dignity and respect as we go along. The concerns about concentrated animal feeding operations or industrial meat production are in most cases quite valid, pollution, how animals are treated, propagation of grain monocultures, hormones, antibiotics, pesticides, herbicides in some cases, unfavorable fatty acid profiles developed in the animals raised in that manner. All of those things are valid. And much of this spun out of post-World War II America as a drive to produce exceptionally cheap meat, inexpensive, affordable, accessible meat, took over the country. However, the same can't be said, the same negatives can't be said about grass-fed, grass-finished, sustainable, agriculturally produced meat. So, which when cattle are fed their natural diet, they produce a better meat, they contribute to carbon sequestration and nitrogen fixation in the soil, and they naturally support the environment as they were designed to do as part of the ecosystem, again, for millions of years. And for the record, let me just say that this episode is not brought to you by anyone but me. This entire show, the Lifetime Body podcast, it's a pro-health show more than it is a pro-meat show by any means. And nobody's paying me to provide you this information. I do work with a local meat supplier here in Southwest Montana. I don't think that's a new disclosure for anyone. And I'm also currently in the process of testing and vetting several large scale distributors, again, for use by my clientele. My goal with this show is, as was all my work, is to provide education and access to better living for our greater community. Enough said. Also, I want to clear up confusion regarding meat and constipation and gastric motility and fiber, or at least provide some points of clarity there. And I did receive some comments which were, I think, a bit misinformed. And again, the data is immense and rapidly evolving, but when we're going to make claims, it's very important for us to be responsible and be up to speed, up to date on the latest information. So meat is one of the primary, if not one of the major foods of humans. Most people don't like to hear that, but it's not some dirty, icky, rotten thing that stays inside of us and pollutes us from within. That's just not true. In fact, meat, when you look at people who are struggling with nutritional sensitivities, allergies, reactions, meat's probably the ideal elimination diet. It's probably the one thing that doesn't seem to propagate autoimmune reactions in most people. That's actually what processed food does for the most part. And so junk food, and we've talked about it before, you know, it's that amazing mix of sugar, seed oils, and processed grains. Like gluten-free crackers, which are very popular in the vegetarian crowd, it's garbage. And high-quality meat is totally different. The heavy feeling some people complain about, actually, from meat consumption is actually called nourishment and satiety. And it's an absence of the need to forage constantly. Your genes crave that feeling. Meat doesn't cause constipation. White paste does. So if you take those refined powders like sugar, flours, and starches, when liquefied, whether that's adding liquid to them or even our digestive juices, it turns to paste, which then ultimately turns to glue, not unlike plaster of Paris, and slows down gastrointestinal transit time. Fiber comes in there because fiber helps in this case as it swells the colon with water and bangs on that glue plug like a hammer until it bursts free. 3 to 5 explosive, bowel-filling, bowel-emptying events per day do not constitute health. That hints at fiber overload, malabsorption possibilities, and irritable bowel syndrome. I'm concerned when there's talk about roughage. Just the word roughage, to me, scares me a little bit because when it applies to ruminants with multi-chambered stomachs who eat insoluble fiber, cellulose, plant matter, regurgitate it and chew their cud and then ferment that grass into tonnages of flesh, well, that's one story. But that doesn't really describe how the human gastrointestinal anatomy and metabolic function operate. Much of our nutrient absorption is done in the small intestine, through a system whose membrane layer is only one cell thick. I'm not interested in putting excessive cellulose into my gut and scraping away those cells like a bristle brush. transit time or colonic emptying with most meat eaters. And again, I'm not saying it's total meat eater, just a person that eats meat or maybe enjoys a bit more meat than plant matter in their diet. That tends to happen at 1 to 2 times daily, and it scores well on the Bristol stool chart in most cases. You can look that up, Bristol, B-R-I-S-T-O-L, and it's a way to, shall we say, grade your performance in the restroom. The current debate rages on with respect to how much insoluble fiber and fermentable fiber we may need to consume for optimal health and what the genetic variances are amongst humans. The gut and health are indisputably related, but that relationship is far from perfectly understood at this time. Let's never lose sight of our common sense. My own personal results, and not just biases and practices, have worked for me, and I'll share them here. But I'm not saying that you should do as I do. I eat a diet that I call the planet-based diet. That's planet-based, P-L-A-N-E-T. It comes from the earth, shows respect for the land and the environment, supports sustainability as well as health, and is derived from both animals and plant sources. I hardly eat any processed or junk food these days, and I try to consume whole, natural, fresh products. I eat a lot of vegetables of many types and a small amount of fruit. Because I hardly ever eat grains and processed foods, I probably eat more vegetables than most vegetarians, especially if they munch on those gluten-free crackers and snacks. I eat a lot of animal products, eggs, fish, some cheeses, and at least a pound of meat every day. I feel and perform great. My blood and other health markers and performance are outstanding. This works for me. Your mileage may vary. Never forget that, please. I spent years studying nutrition and tracking and testing my own system and my own nutritional system, and also how what I eat affects my internal system. So that's where all this comes from. For example, I've tried an all-animal or purely carnivore diet several times. I didn't necessarily feel any better when I did it than when I started. I was feeling good when I started, and I felt good when I finished. So for me, I like my produce. So I'll stick with my planet-based diet and enjoy the things that agree with me. One thing I don't do is most of the nightshade plants, particularly eggplants, green peppers, cucumbers. The ones with those thick, waxy skins just don't work for me. Even if I peel the skin off, there's something about those plants that don't work for me, so I don't include those. I've also done strict veganism several times for as much as 6 months. Interestingly enough, those results were less than spectacular in terms of health and performance. Again, I didn't know then what I know now about supplementation, so the outcome could have been different. I'm certainly open to being objective and open-minded about that. So just make sure you know I'm not speaking out of the wrong orifice here. In the end, I really don't think much about any of this anymore. I just dine and nourish and celebrate and share as part of my view of food. I try to keep that open mind, and I'm sure I'll keep experimenting as I go along. So should you. My ultimate position on feeding the world, caring for the planet, and our ancestral patterns of nourishment come together in this manner. If a person chooses not to eat meat, I respect that. But please don't occasionally eat meat and then swear that you're against it. That's not being fair. And please know your science and care for your long-term health. I honestly don't think you can achieve your highest, absolutely highest potential of health, again in the long term, not the short term, on a no animal product diet. The current science, our ancestral data, and my intuition support that position. We've got work to do, and lots of it, in how meat is raised and distributed. Let's not say we can't do that, or even that we'll try. Let's do it. As I mentioned before, I see the human as a preferential carnivore and an obligate omnivore. While this varies from person to person and is heavily influenced by genetics, we have ancestral biology support for this position. We were opportunistic survivors, but our default pattern was to forage on whatever we could find to bridge the gap between mastodon or megafauna harvests. I support farmers, hunters, butchers, and cooks. I am or have been all of those things, and I think the field-to-table celebration is an undeniable and irreplaceable part of our being human. In summary, I'd like to offer a few final comments. We can all benefit from remaining open-minded and objective with our food. And just as important as that is also being instinctive and intuitive with our appetites and our consumption patterns. And let's not resort to name-calling. I'd say I don't care what you eat and that you should eat whatever you feel like, but that's not true. I care about your health. If you're a dedicated carnivore and are a guest at my table, I'll honor your preferences and serve you some delicious meat. I'll also offer you some sautéed vegetables should you care to have them. And if you're a vegan, you're welcome to whatever looks, smells, and tastes great to you. Let's support and feed each other. Thank you. Thank you for listening to the Lifetime Body Podcast. If you'd like more information on the Lifetime Body publications and services that can help you to achieve ultimate wellness and look, feel, and perform your best, check out thelifetimebody.com. And if you're digging this content, please leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to the show and share it with your friends and family. Until next time, this is the Lifetime Body, where science meets common sense and where we help you make your body last a lifetime.